This is a podcast from Cambridge International Examinations. For further information, visit cie.org.uk.
Good morning, everybody. And it's really nice to be here. And I hear you've had a really interesting conference. And one of my ambitions for this morning is to try to have a good ending rather than be a bad final session for you. The future of school leadership. The talk's in two parts. What I want to say initially is about where we are. What do we now know? What might we need to build on? And then the second half of the talk is going to be about what next. Where we might be going, where we might need to be heading towards. So in that kind of spirit, let's just get cracking straight away and say where we are. I'm going to suggest there are 12 things we now know about school leadership, which are fairly strong internationally claims as well, which are based on three sets of evidence that we've got. First and foremost is the empirical research and the literature. What people have been saying, what people have been writing, and what people have been looking at and finding. A feature of my own research, and a feature of the research we sponsored when I was at the National College for School Leadership here in England, was school-based. It was looking at what was happening in schools and what school leaders were doing. Most of that was conducted in England, in terms of the college's work, because that's where the remit was. But I've done some work in other countries as well, and we did a little bit of work in other countries for a short spell at the college. The second thing is drawing on the experience of successful school leaders. Because whilst we need to know what school leaders are doing, we should particularly focus on the most effective ones. What is it that makes them like that? And in that sense, what I'll be trying to draw on there is what I've heard. When Paul kindly mentioned something about attributing wisdom to me, whenever people use my name and put wisdom alongside it, I think they just mean I'm old. But because I am old, it means I've worked, because school leadership has been one of my strong interests in my career for at least the last 35 years of my career, both as a school leader myself and then as somebody who worked with. Now, I tried last night to kind of count how many school leaders I might have worked with, but I gave up because the number was large. But I have worked with a lot. I've talked with a lot informally. I'll talk with some of you today. But be careful when you talk to me, because I'm always conducting research. I'm always listening. I'm always trying to figure out what the themes are, what the patterns are. Has it changed from what we think we know to what leaders are now saying? And I'm also listening to see if the things you say are consistent with what we think we know. Because leadership is dynamic. It's not fixed. There are some enduring features, but it's also quite flexible in other respects, as I'll say. So a lot of this is born out of what leaders themselves say about their work and their impact. And lastly, which is not just peculiar to this country, to my country, to England, but there is the school inspection evidence that we have as well, which in this country is an enormous resource in terms of figuring out what's going on in schools. And given that all our schools have now been inspected over the last 20 years many times, we have multiple layers and levels and repeat doses of findings that tell us things. And some things keep coming up all the time. You'll be able to see this slide and copies of it. This is simply my reference list. These are the places I've gone to in preparing this talk and drawn from. So that's all it is, and I don't really want to say, as it were, any more about that. You can look at that for yourself. So let's start with the claims. 12 claims. Number one, context matters. What we know is that successful school leaders tend to do pretty much the same things. But it's how they do it which makes as big a difference as what they do. What they do is important, but how they do it is tailored to the circumstances they find themselves in. I should have said, in saying what the sources of my evidence for this talk are, that much of this work is drawn on focusing on listening to, on research evidence which has focused most of all on school principals and head teachers. We know surprisingly little still about assistant principals, vice principals, deputy heads, although that's grown a little bit. And there's still quite a lot of work to do on what I'll call this morning middle leaders, heads of department, faculty leaders, team leaders in schools, and subject leaders. But in terms of what we know about leaders that we have studied, what they do, there are some very strong and clear patterns and similarities. But how they do it, and how they do it changes and is different because they're responding to the circumstances in which they find themselves. So you can watch some leaders at work and see them being very reflective and very thoughtful and taking their time to do things. But often it's because the circumstances allow them to do that. There are other times as a leader when you've got virtually no time whatsoever. And then you can't be that reflective. You can create a little space for yourselves. You can ask for some thinking time. But quite often, you've got to do it quick. So pace, for example, changes and is often not of your choosing or making. So in effect, where you are affects what you do. And with an international audience such as yourselves, and no doubt the conversations you've been having, this is a key variable to draw into. And then there will be regional differences, and then there will be local differences. One of the interesting things, as somebody who's been fortunate enough to visit lots and lots of schools, is how similar they are, but also how different each one is as well. And I could entertain you for many hours on what it's like to go visiting different schools, even in the same country, and how that works out. So context matters. And this slide simply shows you a few schools around the world: India, Finland, Kenya, United Kingdom, Singapore. Just to take this small primary school in England. This is a primary school in Singapore. This school has 85 children in it, aged 4 to 11. This school, aged 5 to 11, has 2,500 in it. It's a feature in England and in many other countries that primary schools, elementary schools, are smaller than secondary schools. There are some countries, of which Singapore is one, which is different. Primary schools are bigger than secondary schools. That affects what you do and how we do things. If you were teaching in this school, you would probably be doing things a little different if you were teaching or leading in this school in Finland. We need to take account of that. And it's much more subtle than that at local level. So where you are affects what you do. What we know is that effective leaders actually understand that point. They get that. And they tune in as carefully and as thoroughly and as closely and as often as they can to their contexts. They are, in the jargon, contextually literate. They are reading what's happening today. Because schools change. Schools change within the school year. When is the best time in a school in your countries to announce a great big change that's going to happen. Before the middle of the year. Okay. It's probably not at the end of the school year, but sometimes you may have no choice about that. In this country, we are 2 weeks into our school year, and if you haven't announced a big change, you might be in trouble. When people come back from the holidays, the break, the recess, is when they're at their freshest, and often they're most optimistic. You see what I'm saying? So you have to act according to the ways in which the school year, the dynamics, the interactions, the interpersonal relations work. So it's adaptive work. Key point, adaptive work. Leadership is adaptive. Not on what I want to do and not on my moods and my wishes and my personal whims, but on the needs of the school. A second claim is that a clear vision is essential. For two sets of reasons, this is the case. It's not just a vision, not just a sense of the future, what lies ahead. It has to be compelling. It has to be something that makes people want to come along with you. There's lots and lots of books about leadership and treating leadership almost as a noun. In fact, I prefer to think of it as to lead, as a verb, as action, as activity. You can't be a leader if you're not taking people with you, if you're not encouraging us all to go on some journey. What is it that makes people want to come along? A compelling vision is this: principles and people, not administrative processes and procedures and rules. Some of that is inevitable, but it's actually about that. And what the principles word brings into play here is something I believe other speakers you've heard this week have said as well, which is it's about values. One of the things followers in all organisations want to know about their leaders in formal positions is who are they and what do they stand for and what do they believe in. That's where vision enters into this. There's increasing use of the idea that leadership is strongly connected to moral purpose, what we're about, why are we here in terms of education and schooling. It is about passions, and so it's about ethics and values. And one of the things that keeps me in this world of work is this business of values. Leaders must be prepared to articulate, explain, and defend their values and the values the school is trying to inculcate. One of the big differences between being a leader and not being a leader in a school is that as a leader, you have to defend what you're doing and explain it and argue it. And therefore, you have to understand what your own values are. And hopefully the last couple of days and this morning might do more of that and do some of that. What is it I believe? What is it I stand for? Why do I go to work every day? What is it? What is it? The Greek philosopher Socrates is reputed to have said that the unexamined life is not worth living. I believe unexamined leadership isn't worth following. Leaders have to look hard at themselves. Why do I think that? Why is it a good idea? Is it still relevant? And these things need to be thought through and tested and rationalized, not simply in an egocentric sense of me, although the sum of that is important, but in terms of, is this what is needed for the children and the students we are trying to educate? To lead, to have a vision, is about providing a sense of direction. Where are we going? Now, a lot of the literature implies that leaders have to provide a sense of direction, and many leaders take that to mean, where do I want us to go? Some of that is okay. But it isn't simply what I want to do. In the case of failing schools and struggling schools, a leader who goes in to move and change the school would probably be okay in saying, this is where I think we should go based on my experience of successful places compared to this one right now. But once the school is becoming more effective, then it has to be about, where do we want to go? What will make the vision compelling? What's the sense of direction people will come along with and join in with and accompany you on your journeys? That's what becomes important. Where are we going? And this, I think, needs to be expressed in terms of the difference we're going to make to the young people we serve. It's about hope. What do we hope for them? What do we wish for them? What do they want and need for themselves? Education is about young people's lives and learning. And visions and a sense of direction have to connect with that. Every one of us needs something to hope for. You do, the staff do, your colleagues do, those we serve, the communities. And schools play a big part in doing that. I said there are some basic practices at the beginning of this. There are, but it doesn't mean to say there's just one way to do it, because of how we do it makes it so varied and rich. The basic practices are about setting directions, what I've just been saying, about developing people, of which I'll say a little more. And it's about redesigning the organisation, changing in small ways and sometimes larger ways the nature of the school, the organisation of departments or teams or the curriculum. So three very basic practices, plus a fourth. Leading, teaching and learning. It is the key task, the key task. Instructional leadership, as they say in North America and in other parts of the world, matters. All the evidence we have shows us it matters most of all. Schools need lots of leaders, and you've heard that this week. I agree. What schools need most are lots of leaders focused on teaching and learning. That's what really, really matters. It is the main thing. It is what schools are there to do. We know one of the main characteristics of unsuccessful organisations commercially, educationally, is that the school, the organisation, loses its prime focus on what it's there to do. Have you ever been into a hospital and been met at reception by people who don't want to talk to you? Have you been into a shop where you can't find anybody to serve you. Those are organizations that have lost their prime focus. They're not doing what they're supposed to do. I was once in a queue in a shop, and the person who was supposed to be taking our money at the checkout was on his mobile phone, talking to somebody else, but not dealing with the three people standing in front of him in a queue. And so when he eventually started to serve the first person in the queue, she stepped forward and said, "Thank you. Can I just say, I have come into your shop, I've walked round your shop, I've picked up everything I want from your shop, I have brought it to you. Would you now do me the kindness of taking my money from me?" That's a shop that's forgotten to sell. It won't be in business for long if it carries on like that. Schools that forget to teach and that it's about learning won't last long either. So the key task is to keep the main thing the main thing. So why do we have to remind ourselves of this? Because in today's world, we know organisations suffer from this disease. One of the things I hear from many school leaders over many, many years, an enduring theme, is how busy they are. I was recently working with a group of school leaders who told me how incredibly busy they are, and only 5 years ago things were much better. I said to them, "Do you know, 20 years ago, Head said exactly the same thing." "Ah, but it's really, really busy now." I said, "Yes, they said exactly that 20 years ago too." There's no shortage of things to do. One of the features of working in a school as a teacher or as a formal leader is you're not short of things to do. You have to choose the really important things to do. As one head said to me once, you have to learn to distinguish between the merely urgent from the really important. What is pressing, what is calling for your time and attention, may nevertheless not be as important as some of the other decisions and ideas that you're contemplating. Let me just go back to that. What we know about organisational life and work across the world is that it's busy, turbulent, demanding and relentless. Everyone I ask about their work, this is one of the things I'm doing in my research projects, I always ask people, "How's your job? What do you do? What's it like?" Right. Everybody, almost everybody says, "Oh, it's very busy. It's very, very busy. Oh, we're so busy, we're run off our feet." It is incredibly rare to find somebody who says, it's a great job, and you know, it's just about right. I've got enough to do. I've got plenty of time to think. I can really dwell on this. It's unusual to find people who say that. It's much more common, compared to that, to find people who say it's really boring here. It's really boring. But most people tell you how incredibly busy it is. Busyness is the enemy of focus. You make a difference in three areas. Three big areas. A super piece of work conducted by Professor Vivian Robinson in New Zealand looked at, she drew together all the quantitative numerical data and studies that have been conducted into the effects leaders make and the difference they make. And she went through all that material from across the world and pulled it together and looked at it and said, it looks like there are these eight areas where leaders make a difference to student outcomes. Okay? If they do these eight things, they will make a difference to what children achieve. That's what's being said here. And then from looking, because they were quantitative studies, she was able to put them in a rank order. Okay? These are not in that order. These are in no order at all. A little task for you, on your own. I'll give you the answers in 2 minutes. What do you think are the top three that make the biggest difference of all if leaders do them? Time starts now. 2 minutes. You might only need one. Top three. Do you want the answers? Are we okay at the back for the answers? Okay. And the top three are, in reverse order. So in third position, bronze medal in this Olympic year. Oh, ticks going round here, I can see. What do you think is number two? Yeah? How many of you got two out of two? And how many of you got one? How many of you got none so far? I didn't get it right when I did this. Right? I was doing it on what I expected. So, the gold medal for effective leaders who want to make the big difference is... I didn't get that one. I'm delighted. Right? I'm delighted as somebody who's worked in this world for a long time. But there's lots of stuff to talk about on this as well. So the eight in order are those. And you can dwell and think about that yourself. But there's a big lesson in the top three. If we just go back to them. The big lesson is, they are strongly connected to teaching and learning. And the big lesson about number one is the importance of colleagues and people. So that's claim five. Claim six, I'm going to move on a little quicker for now. One of the key things is that when things are changing, and we live in turbulent times, and turbulent times are going to carry on. In England for right now, and in many of your schools, right? The announcement on Monday morning that we're going to have a new exam system, right, is one of those key examples of something very easy to say and inordinately difficult to do at all levels. At all levels. And I suspect there have been one or two quite long meetings in the very organisation that's organising your conference as a whole. I'm glad I wasn't in Paul's headquarters on Monday morning. And I suspect he was probably glad he was here rather than there. But that's another story. A little change in the newspapers, a small article, but the effects of that exam system change. It's just one example of the kind of changes that are going on. And what we know about change is today it is constant. Change is the new continuity. We're always having to live with it. And that's why a sense of direction is really important, of leaders reminding people about a sense of direction, about, no, this is where we're going. Right? And change comes in lots of ways. One of the wonderful things about working in a school in my time, and still is, you work with great people called teachers, who are full of ideas on what we wish to do. And I was listening to a head a couple of months ago who was saying to me the importance of knowing where we're going. He said, this is one of the most creative teams I've ever had in this school and in all the other schools I've led, he said. And he said, they keep coming in and they keep saying to me, I want to do this, or I want to go on this program, and I want to try that out. And I'd say, often I have to say to them, that's a great idea, but do you remember 6 months ago when we set up the strategic plan together, we said we were going to do 1, 2, 3, and that's it. But you want to do 4. And you've got to judge whether it's okay to let one person do that, but not at the expense of the main 3, or whether you say, put that on the agenda for next time and we'll see if we can get it in the strategic plan. Change is not just things dumped on you from elsewhere. It comes from within the school itself too. And leaders really have to handle that as positively as they can. Claim 7, the importance of good relations between colleagues and leaders and colleagues. The importance of trust. As leaders, you have to ask yourselves, why should anybody follow me? One of the key reasons people follow other people is they trust them. So how do we build trust and how do we sustain trust? How do we include people collaboratively? How do we make sure that the working conditions are as good as they could be? And how do we ensure that people share things and support one another rather than compete with one another? I once worked in a school many years ago when I first started teaching, where I was horrified as a new teacher to find out that the teacher next door was saying to the children that they mustn't do what they'd done with the teacher who had them before. It was wrong, she said. It was wrong. And she was right. We know in extreme cases this is utterly confusing to the children who don't know what to do because one is saying this and the other is saying that. We need to create the conditions of trust. We need to share leadership, and there's been quite a lot about that, and I think there'll be some questions later this morning about it, hopefully. But how do we do that? Well, these are some of the issues here. The first thing that has to be said is when the time is right, do you share things? I believe strongly in sharing and distributing leadership, very strongly. As a leader, I needed all the help I could get from my colleagues. And they were often much better at making decisions because they were closer to the action than I was. And the same was true in my executive role at the college. Many of my colleagues who were in the hierarchy lower down than me were much better. But the conditions were right for them to do that. In some schools, in some situations, the conditions are not always right. So only when they're right and when people are willing and ready to have a go do we think about it. But we know when we've got a team of good leaders, the school will be better than when it's reliant on one person. We know that too from some of the more recent studies that are taking place. This connects to the gold medal from Vivian Robinson's work about developing people. Increasingly, we are seeing and thinking about the importance of managing the talent that resides in our schools. The staff. You work with really talented teachers. They're differently talented. Some will even hide their talents from you. But we need to develop them. And in particular, the importance of developing other leaders. If we want to distribute leadership, we have to develop people to be leaders. One of the characteristics of my own career, if I'm just a little indulgent about myself here, is that people believed in me much more than I believed in myself. Think of the people who've helped you reach the points in your own careers today. Who was it who suggested you had a go at this? You might try that. You might go to that. They're leader makers. They're leader developers. The only thing you need to be a leader is the opportunity to lead. What you have to do is give people lots of opportunities to lead, and then make sure every opportunity they have to lead is a learning opportunity. That they are supported, they're talked to, you listen to them. How are they getting on in this, taking on this responsibility? What do they think is going well? Where do they need some skill help? The first time I was asked to lead a staff meeting, I was so desperate because I didn't know how to run a meeting that I went away and read an education book. But it said nothing about how to manage meetings. So I found a management book that told me how to manage meetings. And I tried to do that. Opportunities are learning opportunities. And development and distribution are two sides of the same coin. Number 10. Relationships with those outside. This is self-evident. I won't labour it. I think other speakers have covered quite a lot of this yesterday in particular. Really important the school is connected and interacted. And because you've covered this, I'm not going to labour it. Even though I do want to say it's really, really important. If you haven't got the trust and the confidence of your stakeholders, of your clients, of those you serve, then the school's in trouble. We also know that whilst we can share leadership and we need lots of leaders, that the role of head teachers and principals remains very critical. Very critical indeed. And we can't deny that. And a lot of the work on sharing leadership sometimes forgets that. The role of the head changes. The role of the principal changes when we share leadership. They become a leader of leaders. They have to lead a team of leaders and develop that team of leaders as individuals and as a group. And the last point, which leads to the second half of this talk, is that leadership itself is changing and will keep on changing. So now let me get to the second part. If that's what leadership is like in terms of those 12 quite large ideas, if that's what leadership is like, what next? Is it going to stay like that? Well, I don't think so, because of number 12. It's changing. It's changing. But it's not all changing, and it's not changing all at once either. So what do we think is coming? Well, first of all, let me deal with this idea of looking into the future. Because it was either an arrogance on my part to think I could say something about the future, or much more likely, a foolishness on my part to accept the invitation to talk about it. Because we know looking into the future is a notoriously difficult thing to do if we're trying to predict. I like this quote. Does it mean it's futurology? Is it about prediction? Well, I used to think it was. But now I don't think it is about prediction. It's not about prediction, but we can look forward because it's about futures thinking. It's about strategic foresight. This is what strategic foresight is. What is currently going on that might turn out to be of enduring or lasting significance into the future as we move ahead? It's not about prediction, it's about what are the main likelihoods and possibilities based on current trends. And I say that for two reasons. Firstly, I do tend to believe this. What will take place in the future for many more of us may already be happening in some places for a few right now. And secondly, we can see lots of examples in the material world of the connection between past, present, and future. Best is shown this way. The future grows from what we presently know and do. This is one of the very first cars. It's no surprise it was called a horseless carriage. Because when they were designing the car, they based it on what they knew about vehicles and what the current technologies enabled. Doesn't look anything like today's cars. Things grow from what we're presently doing. If that's true, then we need to start with where we are, which is why I did, with those 12 claims. We need to start with them. Because the seeds of tomorrow are growing today. What we have to get better at are spotting the ones which will carry on. I think all 12 claims will carry on. I don't think the changes are going to come in that way. The fourth one, the focus on teaching and learning, has to be forever. However it is enacted is a different issue. The focus on it has to be forever. because it's the future of schooling. Now, whether schools continue, that's a good question. That's a good question. We've only had state-provided and funded schooling in this country 432 years. It's not long in history terms. I don't know if we'll have schools in 100 years' time. I don't know if we have schools, whether they'll look like what we're doing right now. But I think there are six possibilities currently going on that might be clues to where leadership may be going. And I want to just quickly run through them. Those are the six, and on your copies you can dwell on them. We'll look at each in turn. First of all, we're going to keep finding new ideas and thinking through more carefully what we're doing. Over the last 10 years or so, the literature inside education and outside education has told us about level 5 leaders. Jim Collins's work, From Good to Great, smashing book. Not about education, although it's a wholly educative book. Well worth reading if you haven't. If you have, you'll know what a level 5 leader is. If you haven't, look it up. Level 5 leaders. Very daunting task. Quite different to the individualistic, heroic heroine figure that we've often been offered as a leader model. The adaptive leadership idea has come along. The servant leader idea has come along. It is the job of the leader to serve the team, not to be the boss, as it were, or bossy. And of course, and speakers yesterday were covering this, the increasing emphasis on both teacher and student leadership. I think those ideas have probably got, I've gotten further to travel than at present. But what else? Well, the second one is about making the best use of our best leaders. There is no doubt from all my visits and work with head teachers over many, many, many years in this country and with principals in many other countries too, is that the really successful ones are fantastic. I have so much to offer. We don't need professors of leadership who can talk about it. We need people who can do it to talk about it. We need people who are doing it to talk about it. We need people who are doing it to do it in the company of others who want to do it or want to get better. Because they've got all the skill. They've got the real wisdom, actually. The question is, how do we make that available? Now, that's an important question. Because one of the interesting things about working with some very, very, very effective leaders is they're very, very effective in their schools. But they're not always very effective out of their schools talking to other leaders. One of the best heads I knew many years ago in his school managed to alienate a whole audience of 150 head teachers I invited him to talk to. Because he made it sound, and he came over as what somebody called an eye specialist. Nothing to do with these eyes, it's to do with I. He used I throughout. I want, I do, I say, I hope, I wish, you will. He came over in that strongly egocentric way. And yet actually in the school it was nothing like that. So can the best always be the leaders of the rest? Well, the work that's going on at the National College School of Leadership in England has created a cadre of over 500, I think it's about 625, if I remember rightly, national leaders of education, nominated and appointed, carefully selected, visited, tested in an informal way, to be people who are willing and able to work with other leaders, and so are their schools and their staff in their schools to work with other schools. So there's school-to-school support. And the phenomenon we've developed very recently in this country of teaching schools is consistent with that. So the National Leaders of Education may be one way of mobilising the expertise and the talent that exists already in our school system and amongst leaders to help others. And we have seen it work in some of our urban centres. We have seen something called London Challenge, which started about 10 years ago, has transformed London schools. The city, London schools are unusual in the world in that they are a complex urban environment and a capital city whose schools are now outperforming the rest of the country, when it is more normal for such schools in other countries to underperform compared to the rest of the country. But London schools are amongst the very best we have because of school-to-school support and leaders taking responsibility for other leaders and helping to run a variety of schools. The challenge we face, what many policy people in your countries as well as this country have been saying for some time now, is however many schools we've got, can we find enough people to run them, to lead them? Not just as heads and principals, but as teams of leaders. Are there enough people good enough right now to do what is required to make our schools successful? That's why making the best use of the best is so important. Thirdly, I think these three words will figure larger than at present, and they've been figuring large in many places for a long time. We know that school leaders in the Netherlands, which are probably the most autonomous school system in this country and in many other places, school leaders like to feel they've got freedoms and flexibility to deal with local needs and to deal with and respond to the strengths of their own schools and staff. They like having some autonomy. They don't like being told what to do. They don't like being dictated to. But with freedom comes some control. With autonomy comes accountability. Because schools are very expensive places. It costs a lot of money, and most of that money for most of the schools around the world comes from other people's pockets. Be it state funding through taxation, be it fees in the independent schools and the fee-paying schools. People want to know what you're doing with both our children and our money. And sometimes it sounds more like we want to know what you're doing with our money more than what you're doing with our children. But actually the two questions are almost the same. People want to know what you're doing and have a right to know what you're doing. You have taken the most precious thing they have for a few hours every day, their children. And on top of that, you're spending their money too. Accountability is really important. Autonomy can breed competition between schools. But it doesn't have to be at the expense of sharing and collaborating either. The two can go together. And I think we might see greater signs because of the last idea, heads working more collaboratively, of collaboration too. Are we perhaps going to move to more highly interactive network schools? So having said that about autonomy, I'll pull out of that the fourth one, which is about collaborations and networks. And the interesting thing about collaborations and networks is they're flat. They're not hierarchical. If I join a network, it's not to be subservient to somebody else. It's to make a contribution and to benefit from everybody else's contribution. And if you don't contribute, you're not in the network. You're just a recipient or a taker within it. So we may see much more around these sorts of ideas. The fourth one is no surprise, given the gold medal status it was awarded in the first half of this talk. Schools are pretty good at developing children. How good are they at developing teachers? My experience of listening to teachers talking about their schools is that they find schools very variable in creating opportunities for them to develop and grow as professionals. It's varied. Some schools are outstanding and some are not. There are even some schools and some principals who actively work not to develop people, because if they develop them, they think they'll lose them. I got a few nods to that. I'm always doing research. I must tell you, two nods confirms any research I'm ever doing. Three nods like that last one, that makes this a real truth. In Singapore, they've gone to set up every school as a learning community. Lots of schools have done that by themselves on their own. We probably need to take that idea. We need to look at what are the best organisations at learning with and from one another. How do they do it? How do they do it? One of the characteristics of them, apparently, from the work I'm still trying to conduct, is that they have high-performing teams and they make very great demands on teamwork in those schools and how teamwork operates. I might say more about that later. But talent management is surely going to have to come bigger and better. Part of that is developing leaders, as I've said before. I think this will continue to grow. It will grow in two ways. There will be more opportunities for leadership development, and there will be more opportunities to lead in schools as part of leadership development as well. We need to focus more on on-the-job learning. We need to give people access to what really great leadership looks like. When I became a head, I was probably too young, looking back on it. I was probably too young, and I'd only worked with three head teachers by the time I became a head teacher myself. I don't think I'd seen enough heads. And of those three heads, one was not very good at all, and two were bewilderingly, differently successful. Right? This one was good and this one was good, but they were so different. I needed to see more than that. And I hadn't actually, compared to what I now have seen, in my two good heads, I hadn't seen a great head. Somebody who says something and does something and you think, wow, never even thought of trying that. We need coaching, we need mentors, we need to share professional knowledge and wisdom that people have. And we need to do it quicker than we're doing it. Professional development can be quite slow. It needs to quicken up. And we need to evaluate performance much more than we do. We need to be much more analytic of ourselves, of self-evaluation, and also of one another. And more honest about it. More open about it. And we need to keep looking at innovations and different practices that are going on. If it's out there, we should be looking for it now. What is going on? How is it happening? So we need to study it and study ourselves in doing that. Those are just my ideas. That's all they are. What's more important, or what are your ideas? What do you think the future of school leadership in your countries and in your contexts is going to be? So the task in the groups we're about to go into after a short break is this. So I'm going to put a comma on the morning now. We're going to take a break. It looks to me like you all need a quick run around the playground. You need to see that the sun is shining, because in here it could be midnight and we wouldn't know it. See you later. Coffee now.
This is a podcast from Cambridge International Examinations. For further information, visit cie.org.uk.